Gray Fox. Praise Games. Kept you waiting, huh?
Hello and welcome to Gray Fox Plays Games, the video games podcast, where a bunch of friends jump on a podcast every fortnight, give or take. They'll talk about video games, what they love, what they hate, and that sweet, sweet fandom in between. We are live on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, no longer Stitcher actually, that's dead now, isn't it? But wherever wherever good podcast services are found. A little bit of ring dust, we're away, but we're back. I'm going to start with our producer, the man in the chair, Jonathan Moles.
Good evening, sir.
How are you doing? I can see you've got a bandage on your hand. What happened?
Just a minor DIY related injury. It's all good. It's all good.
Unfortunate smelting accident.
Unfortunate gold smelting accident. Yes, I wish. No, I'm good. I'm good.
Fantastic. All right, and I am joined by our trophy man, the Platinum Hemming man, Alex Hemming, a Lemming Plays. How are you, sir?
Good evening. I'm good. Thank you. How the devil are you?
Thanks for asking. I'm tired. The reason why we didn't pod last week was we're in Lisbon together, and our man in Spain will be joining us shortly, Mr. Michael Carden Edwards. But the week hit me like a 10-ton truck, and you little adventurous go-getter, you just got back from the cinema seeing Mr. Denis Villeneuve's apparent masterpiece, Dune 2, or as the French would say, Dune 2. you've just got out of it. What was your thoughts?
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. It's a very dreamlike film. It's beautiful, like the original. It's just the scenery, the framing, and everything about it is just a joy to watch. So I saw it on the IMAX, and I think that's going to be the best way to watch it. It is filmed for that, so it's going to be the best way. And yeah, there's just moments where you're just blown away by the cinematography of it, and just... It looks incredible. I don't want to give too many spoilers, so I don't know how much I can say.
Yeah. It's like the book's like nearly 100 years old, but still people are like, spoiler alert! And it's like, well, yeah, like, it's been remade, like... Well, the book's been out for nearly 100 years. It's been remade about 4 times. There's been TV shows and video game adaptations, but still, like, it shows the potential and the reach that this story could have, because still not many people actually know the real story behind this, right? And they go, oh, it's a bit derivative of Star Wars, isn't it? And Star Trek. It's like...
Or it's like Game of Thrones in space. And it's like, well, that's because this inspired pretty much every sci-fi thing that came after.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, it's like 2001. Like, if you've never watched 2001 and you watch it now and you go, everything ripped this off. Like, everything. And it's kind of the same with Dune from, like from a story perspective. All right, don't spoil the story, but my complaint, if there is such a thing, from the first film was, and this is with every Denis Villeneuve movie, right, is that he makes stunningly beautiful films. You cannot knock the vision that man has, right?
This is, again.
Right. Yeah. Arrival, fucking beautiful. His Blade Runner movie, like, has some of the best stylistic things you'll ever see in a film. However, for whatever reason, for me, they seem to drag and they feel a little bit... And the first Dune movie very much felt like that. And everyone has said, no, this is the action now. We're getting like the big stuff. And this is where you get your popcorn Dune sex toy thing, because you're getting so much action from all of this, right?
I don't think we get that in the UK, sadly. We are sexless over here. We're not allowed to have sex with a popcorn bucket.
No popcorn fleshlight tubs.
No, sadly not. Just a collector's cup, and that's not quite as fun.
Yeah, heavy tried to... Oh, well, that's not something you tried to do. Nope. Right, so everyone's talking about the Elvis guy. Do you know the guy who played Elvis in that biopic? He's in this movie as well. I can't remember the actor's name.
Oh, is that hit? Right, yeah. Okay. I know.
Everyone's gushing about this guy, saying he's incredible in this movie, like scene-stealing everything he's in. Is that true, or is it just because he's bald and looks weird?
He's bald and looks weird, and he's slightly menacing. But as my partner Steph, as she said as we were leaving, it was like, he's got one expression, and he does basically just have one face throughout the whole film, which is, Grrr, I'm bold and angry.
Did he keep his Elvis accent? Because the actor who played him, he didn't. Well, after he played Elvis, like every interview he'd done, he was just like, oh, yeah, not meet you people. And it's like, it's like my Timothy Chalamet impression. I really like Dead Redemption 2. It's that basically what that film is.
But yeah, basically, why not? I will say the scene which he is introduced in is fantastic because it's all shot in black and white. So you're on like the home planet of the Harkonnen, which are the nasty, bold, pale people. And they are, the whole thing is black and white and it looks incredible, this fight scene that takes place there. So yeah, well worth checking out. 2 hours, 45 minutes, but this one didn't drag for me. It definitely kept your attention the whole way through. Didn't just have long scenes of staring wistfully into the desert, which the first one has.
But also had Oscar Isaac with a beard,
which was fantastic.
Which is fantastic. I mean, what good beard?
See paintings of Oscar Isaac, but we don't actually. Obviously, yeah.
With great beard comes great box office. We're on Big Dave view, right? Yeah, we always hold a candle for Big Dave on this podcast. How is he in this one? Is he good? Is he getting much? What?
Yeah, he's only in it for probably like 5 minutes screen time, I'd guess, all in.
Motherfuckers.
His character has quite an interesting arc, which I liked, but he doesn't get a lot of screen time. Good,
well,
as Dave Bautista is bound to be. But
he's a great actor, man. Like,
oh, he's amazing.
He's quietly becoming one of the best actors going, and not because he's just going to be in a khaki shirt in lots of summer blockbusters. Like, he's generally learning his craft under some of the best directors. I'm pretty sure, mark my words, in the next 5 years' time, he will be in a Scorsese movie. He seems to find directing. Like, he was in an M. Night Shyamalan movie just for the fucking shits and giggles. He knows what he's doing. He's done a Bond film. He's kind of tried a bit of everything, and I just goddamn love him for it. So hopefully we see more Dave headlining even more stuff in the future. Give us
part three is going to be... It ends again because it's not culmination of the film. There is going to be a third one, and it basically sets it up as shit's about to go down is where this one ends.
Is that how the first one ends, though, really? Isn't that about most films end like that, to be fair?
If there's going to be a sequel, yeah. I think the first one, I remember it just sort of ended with, and now he's joined the desert people. And then it just sort of stops, and I'm like, oh.
I must go now. My planet needs me. Timothy Chalamet was killed on his home planet. Yeah.
This one feels like more of a definitive, yeah, okay, this is now about to happen, and it's going to be big, nasty, mad action, Return of the King style nonsense going
on. Did he stand there in front of a crowd of people, held his little dagger up to the sky, and go, Red Dead Redemption 2!
He did not.
They missed the trick. Oh, anyway, give me the lasagnas.
You will be sick of people saying Lisan Al Gaib throughout this film because they repeat that all the time. I don't know exactly.
White Devil.
It's the name of the prophecy, so he's meant to be the chosen one. And Lisan Al Gaib is like the term for him. So you hear that all the time. There's basically a guy in the film where if Timothy Chalamet's character would have farted, he would have gone, Lisan Al Gaib.
Which actually translates into Red Dead Redemption 2. Who would have known?
There you go.
His
name was Paul. Did anyone remember his name was Paul? I don't know.
But a sci-fi epic spanning hundreds of years, generating millions of stories.
Five out of five lasagnas for me. Loved it.
Ooh.
Wow, that's what we call Garfield in the business. Anyway, that's what Hebby's just been watching. Molesy, I know you've been a busy boy. We've been busy boys together. That sounds a bit more romantic than I meant it to sound.
Sounds a bit wrong,
anything you've been watching or playing in the molehole?
Yeah, I've been hitting up dramas and documentaries on ITV and BBC. So I watched, what was it called? Breathless. On ITV, which was a...
Was this the Bewitched story?
No, this was the NHS pandemic from the eyes of...
No, it's the cause, weren't it? Fuck's sake, Flint. No, your 90s pop music.
Yeah, I chose to ignore you because it just wasn't happening. It was the pandemic from the eyes of the doctors and the nurses on the front line. Very good. It has been triggering for some people.
Really?
Yeah, because it is...
Well, I suppose.
Right, it's really good, though. if you fancy that sort of thing. And then I also watched the BBC documentary on the Wayne Cousins murderer.
The Sarah Everard.
Yeah. Issue.
That was
a hard
to watch it because it seems like it's just absolutely horrendous.
The guy is, it's a hard watch. Very hard watch. But very well done. So that's nice. That's the two big hitters that I've hit up this week.
Nice. I watched the Hideo Kojima documentary on Disney Plus, Connecting Worlds. Now, what I find fascinating about this, I've mentioned before, I've worked at quite a few different startups over the last couple of decades, nearly, and one of the things that always baffles me is people that commission having a documentary or a videographer following them around at like conferences and shit, because you're just like, what happens if it doesn't work out? Like, the amount of documentaries, there must be like a place in hell for like all these documentaries that never see the light of day because it's just, it turns out we didn't get funding, there you go, whatever. But I suppose with Hideo Kojima, there's probably going to be a success story at the end of this. But anyway, the premise of this is he had a camera crew follow him around a little bit from the moment he founded Kojima Studios. And this follows the immediate aftermath of him forming the studio and in build-up to the release of Death Stranding. Now, what I find absolutely fascinating about this is the main premise of this documentary is you're about to launch a new game and you're about to maybe create a bit of a new genre and everything else. I have played Death Stranding. I have watched a YouTube video that's 4.5 hours long explaining to me the story of Death Stranding. Hemming, you've played Death Stranding. Have you ever completed it?
I have. I finished the story, yeah.
Yeah, good for you. Do you know what the story is? Don't explain. Could you answer the question? If I said to you, what is Death Stranding? Could you say, yes, I know what that is?
I could tell you bits of it, but I do not remember the whole story, no.
Right, so this documentary had a real challenge of going, right, okay, we're going to do a documentary about Hideo making a new game. And they managed to not describe this new game in any way. Because you can imagine the producer sitting there going, so what is it again? Yeah, bollocks. We're just going to have a bunch of famous people talk about how much they like Hideo Kojima. And it was the biggest... I mean, I'm a Hideo fanboy. Everyone on this pod knows we are. We've named a goddamn pod after the legacy of Hideo Kojima, right? But this is so culty of just like... Here's Del Toro just going, he's a really talented man. And then like going to, sorry, that's a terrible impression of him. And then going to lots like, then also Jeff Keighley just going, yeah, he's a genius. He's just like making some amazing things. They never explain the game. They don't really talk about the studio. They don't really talk about the failings that he had at Konami. They don't really do anything except they just follow him on a couple of press tours about to show Death. They even get Norman Reedus, who's just like, yeah, I don't really know the story, but I was told if Hideo like offers you a gig, you take it. So I did, and I'm glad I did. But and then they show scenes of him in the mocap suit talking to Mads Mikkelsen, and they're like, "Yeah, I don't get this. Yeah, I don't get this either. Just act the scene."
Yeah, Mads Mikkelsen's stuff in the game is bizarre. It's like him singing "Happy Birthday" to a baby in a jar, and then World War II flashbacks.
It's amazing because you spend an hour with Hideo Kojima and you know nothing more about him. Other than he'll sit there and go, I like films. I want to be a director. I get to be a director doing this sort of stuff. So yeah, we knew that, Hideo. You didn't need to make a documentary about it. Like anyone who's going to watch this thing knows the superficial stuff. So it just felt like a wasted opportunity, which is kind of a shame, really. But, you know, we got to see him smile, got to see his studio a little bit. And, it gives you a fascinating insight as to if that documentary came out before the announcement that he made with Sony, then we would have been speculating about him going into films very shortly, because he does drop a lot of hints about that. And you see lots of, hey, I'm just hanging out at Sony Studios, not the video game place, the Columbia Studios place. Like, you know stuff's coming. It did make me think, though, because the guy who's going to make the Metal Gear movie is still, like, tweeting art, concept art, and talking about it. It's like, mate, that film's never coming out. Like, you've been in limbo hell for, like, 6 years. You've got Oscar Isaacs, like, signed up to, with great beard, right? He's going to have a great beard if he knows the plan out. role, but like, yeah, it, that ain't ever coming out. But yeah, that's what I watched. Hemming, talk to us about Final Fantasy Rebirth, because you have been on that train a little bit.
Yes, I have. I have been having a bloody wonderful time with it. It is what I wanted it to be, and more so.
Have you played the piano?
Yes, I have played the piano. It's very good. There's a lot of free play with it, but when you actually get the set pieces of music, you just need to concentrate on directions with the analog stick. You don't need to be like fiddling, but there's going to be some very nice pieces of music that people make with it, similar to the guitar from Last of Us. Yes. People are going to have a lovely time with that.
I've subscribed to a playlist on YouTube of people that are uploading tons of covers. My favourite so far has been Still Dre being done beautifully on the piano. It's just a joy to behold that. There's other mini games in this. Talk to me about that goddamn card game, Hemming.
So, yeah, you get introduced to it very early on, but it's a card game called Queen's Blood. It's quite simplistic, so it's not like triple triad levels of deep. It is quite a simplistic game, but it's very Moorish. When you play it and it goes well, you just want another, and you want another. And every time I go to a new town now, it's like, right, first things first, find the people to play this card game against. And there's a whole section where you do a card game tournament, which leads me to my next point about this game. They have not dialed down on the silliness. So Final Fantasy VII had a lot of silly moments in it, and there were sections that people were worried that weren't going to be brought across. Like when the first game came out, they were worried, are they going to cut the whole cross-dressing thing where Cloud puts on a dress and does that whole section? They didn't. In this one, are they going to cut out the section where Barrett dresses up in a big sailor suit and looks like a marshmallow man? Or Red 13 dresses up in a soldier's outfit and waddles around on two legs? No, they lean into it and they go full hog. I don't want to spoil too much, and I don't think it's a massive spoiler, but you end up in a section. Actually, it's kind of a massive spoiler.
I've seen loads of clips on social media of everyone wearing bikinis.
Oh yeah, Tifa is. You go to a Costa del Sol, and they wear beach attire. But Red 13, when he's in the soldier outfit, spoiler klaxon, he does a Michael Jackson dance.
Amazing.
Forced introduced to him, they're like, a mystery man appears, and then it's a dog on 2 feet moonwalking, and it's like, okay, all right.
amazing. So Costa del Shlong and Michael Jackson moonwalking dog. What
absolutely, there you go.
Game
of the year. The open world as well is fantastic. It is beautiful. It's got the whole checklist thing that you'd think from a Ubisoft game, but it's enjoyable rather than tedious.
I find it fast. This game's, what, week and a half, 2 weeks out now it's been out for?
And yeah, a couple of weeks.
I am not hearing the hype train of Game of the Year. Even though prior to this, everyone's like, oh, I'm feeling those vibes, motherfucker. I can't wait to get back into this. And, like, it's just silence. And I don't understand why. Is that just because everyone's getting their teeth into it, or is it just not as good?
I think it's people getting their teeth into it, because it is very good. But it's meant to be quite long. So I, from the trophy side of things, I did have a quick look. Trophy guide came up and said it's going to be between 150 to 200 hours to get up the platinum in it. So
That's about as much as I've sunk in Elden Ring so far.
Yeah, there you go. You could have platinum Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
I could have. But then
you
again,
could have been looking at Tifa the whole time.
In my dreams, I do, my friend. So if we had to say in the pantheon of Final Fantasies, where does Rebirth sit in terms of the GOAT for you?
Oh, man, I'm going to have to finish it first before I can make a definitive on that. I preferred 16 so far because it was a new story, a new character, and the combat is, for me, better because 7 still tries to do the hybrid between action and turn-based, whereas 16 was pure action and did it very, very well. But I'll let you know once I finish it.
All right, okay. I'll come back to you in 150 or 160 hours. Speaking of like updates and things that got people busy, so we should probably get into newsy stuff. And when Mikey joins or if he joins, we can, you know, we'll go from then. that's the jingle. There we go. This is the jingle. What can I say? Spider-Man 2, the update came out this week, and it's got people talking. I was quite hyped about this, and you all laughed at me like I was a goddamn fool, saying, all right, Flint, new game plus, oh, he's excited. But actually, they've done a fidelity update on the graphics. Apparently, they've done an RT performance-y mode again, like they've done in the previous one, so you can get the best of both again, the old Hovis mode. But also, they've been updating the suits. And one of the things that people have gone absolutely bonkers for is the Sam Raimi Spider-Man suit has always been in the game, but they've gone back and they've made it completely photo accurate to the original trilogy, and people are having lots of fun because apparently the model, the character model they used, was the character model from Spider-Man No Way Home. For the geeks out there, you'll know what I mean by that. They upgraded the suit a little bit in that movie. So what they've done is they've really gone back and just made it look like that any photograph in photograph mode would look like it was hand-picked from the early 2000 movies. And what people are doing is they're reenacting the scenes with the symbiote being pulled off, and it kind of looks like Spider-Man 3 in the movie, which is fucking incredible to see. Anyway, that's a long-winded way of saying it's a fantastic game made to look even better with more stuff in, and stuff's good. Hemming, do you think you'll be coming back to Spider-Man 2 after hearing about this amazing new update?
Probably not, just for a suit.
You platinumed the DLC. It, didn't you?
I have, yeah. When the DLC comes out and there's more content, I will definitely jump back on. But I was just looking at pictures of the suit now. Yeah, it looks bloody lovely, doesn't it?
Look, gorgeous, doesn't it?
That does, I like that.
I have to say, that's a fantastic suit. the only thing is, also, is that they've added a bunch more suits without impacting the trophy list for people. And I have to say, the Miles Morales suits start out looking very, very good. And it looks like towards the end, there's a lot of shit. There's a lot of terrible looking ones.
There's a lot of naff Miles Morales costumes. Even the one that's in game is like, this is the costume I made. I love this suit. I think that looks shit.
that was actually like a sponsored collaboration with Adidas. So like Adidas sat down with, I think it was Adidas. I'm pretty sure it was Adidas. A big sports brand. I think it was Adidas. Producer Miles might be able to correct us otherwise. But they sat down with Insomniac and they were like, okay, let's design Miles Morales' suit. A suit for Miles Morales. We will make a trainer to accompany this and release that at some point. And that's the, I think I know the one you're talking about because I've seen it all over social media where it's like, ah, Miles Morales original. And it's like, they're the Miles Morales original's fucking shit. It does not look good. You are right about that. Okay, look, we've vamped for long enough about this. Let's talk about it. A lot has happened since the last pod. A lot of bad stuff. And I don't want to spend too much time dwelling on this, but there have been a number of layoffs in the industry. And, you know, we always said in this pod, we'll reflect the industry. If there's bad stuff going on, we'll talk about it. It's good stuff to talk about it as well. So let's talk about it for a second. Sony Studios have announced a number of closures and changes in their first party studios. Bungie were one of the biggest hit, but also a number of various other studios within their portfolio have also announced redundancies, etc., as well as EA. This stings a lot because both of those companies are very well off and do very well. And if we think about the pandemic, actually the sort of studios that profited the most was your first party studio titles, as well as EA with the, you know, the FIFA franchise and everything else in between. Hemming, what do you have to say about this, my friend?
One of the bits that really hurts, particularly about the Sony layoffs, is that it affects the UK workforce a lot. So Sony PlayStation London studio is gone. It doesn't exist anymore. While they didn't make a lot of massive titles, they were behind The Getaway, which was great back in there. Media Molecule are okay.
Are they okay? All right.
They're okay at the moment, anyway. But they were one of the studios that were basically the go-to for experimentation. So they would be involved a lot in like the iToy and VR and PS Vita. They would be used to create games as their, you know, this is how we show off what this can do. Yeah, it's tech demo stuff. And they've just completely, they're gone. I don't know if that's a reflection on VR2 and how things have been going, but or just a reflection on the UK market and Brexit and all that lovely stuff that comes hand in hand with that. But 900 people, 8% of its global workforce being cut out is, it just sucks, man. But I'm so happy to hear about some studios that are putting out the word and going, look, we've got jobs. Good guy Sean Murray from Hello Games going on there and going, if you guys want to chuck your CV my way, I will have a look at it. We need more people like that and more studios like that, because it is such a shame to see this many talented people not in work right now.
Absolutely. You are 100% right on that. I think the only, I keep saying this as a silver lining, if there is such a thing, is that for every person that gets laid off, hopefully that means that another connection happens with another studio at some point, or another studio forms. So I can imagine for every 100 people that get fired, one person will walk out of that and go, fuck you, I'm doing my own thing. And that's where you get the innovation again, and you'll get swallowed up by the big boys again. Toys for Bob, great example, right? The cycle goes on, right? Yeah, exactly. Sunrise, sunset. This is not a game studio, and I don't want to put it in the same breath as a game studio, because it's not. But we also need to talk about this as well. Rooster Teeth. This may be a name you're familiar with, or maybe not, but you've definitely heard of their content. So Red vs. Blue was a famous YouTube skit of people using a mod on Halo 2, and it became a bit of a comedy series, and it spawned a company that spawned a portfolio of shows that spawned a channel. And I believe it's owned by Warner Brothers, and they've decided to shut it down. Now, this sucks, because there's probably tens of personalities that you either know or you follow or you subscribe to that probably cut their teeth at Rooster Teeth at some point in their career. But I think this is also another sign of, like, Rooster Teeth grew in the age of, hey, give us money and we'll expand our portfolio. Oh, what's your audience? This is our audience side, but one day we'll monetize it. One day we'll make lots of money. And, you know, for context, Rooster Teeth have been running for 20 years and have never been profitable. So I completely agree. It sucks for the individuals involved, but you have to look at, like, basic business decisions there, right? Of, like, if you've not turned a profit in 20 years, like, I'm doing a good turn. Like, what do you expect was going to happen? So that's why I don't want to put that in the same bracket as the game studios. But again, it's empathetic of the times right now. Changes are happening. Hemming, did you ever cross Rooster Teeth?
I mean, like you say, Red versus Blue was much must-watch internet content back in the day, and this is pre-YouTube when they started this. So It was like, I can't even remember what website it was on, but you went on every week, and there was a new episode of it. Sarge saying something stupid, blowing people out the sky. I also liked from a Trophy Hunter side of things, they made content called Achievement Hunter, which was a bunch of them would sit down, play a game, and then talk through how to earn certain trophies. And that was sort of breaking ground in creating that kind of content, which other people have done and taken to a much higher level than they ever did. I know they made another animated series called Ruby, which I haven't watched, but I thought was quite successful for them, because you could see adverts for it. But yeah, I just didn't realize that they were not turning a profit at any point in their entire existence. That's just that was a huge shock and crazy.
Yeah, the CEO done a very long YouTube video. He fired all of his staff and he decided to record his daily podcast. sorry, I don't mean to laugh there, but the point of just, like, talk about, I think that's just, it shows their leadership there, right? Of just I've just laid people off. You know what? Oh, what? No one wants to come in. All right, well, I'll just record a podcast at my, and again, if you want to kind of see where poor decisions get made and stuff, just watch that video. He's literally standing in a studio filled with waste, right? It's like a pop machine. There's arcade machines in the corner. There's lots of neon lights and stuff. And I don't, you got to look the part. I totally understand that. But to Hemming's point, got to turn a profit. Look at the Kind of Funny guys, right? That's a great example of how to do it right. They started in their fucking living rooms. They then went to their basements. They then turned their basements into studios. They then went when they were profitable. I don't know how profitable they are, mind, but obviously there's a financial reason for them being so successful. They then built their own studio. They then started doing third-party contracts with WWE and hosting their fan event shows and stuff like that. I don't hear of anyone backing them. It's all Patreon and their own advertising. Like, that's, if you're going, It's the impossible model. Let's be very clear, right? You cannot really monetize this sort of stuff anymore. And the only time you could back then was when you had idiots that would give you money. Those
Which
idiots...
is what Warner Brothers did to
Exactly, yeah. And that there isn't idiots with money at the moment. So, like, you have to go out on your own. You have to be profitable from day one, which means spend to your expenditure, which means you can be very professional with what you've got. That doesn't mean that you have to go extend yourself. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
No, I was just going to throw out a shout because we spoke a bit about them before when Yahtzee left from The Escapist. But yes. Second Wind, they did the same thing. They just decided we're breaking away and we're going to build it purely on Patreon and we'll only go as big as the fan base will allow us to go. And they've been very lucky and very well backed by their fans. And that seems like the best model right now if you're doing this kind of thing.
You're in charge of your own destiny.
Yeah, and build as that builds, reduce as that reduces, and keep an eye on things as it goes. It's manageable, you can keep on top of it, and that way you know you're not just going to be at the whim of somebody going, actually, not going to be keeping this up anymore, bye-bye.
Yeah, so what? I'd love to know what happened. Like, just once a year, like, the Rooster Teeth guys have to walk into Warner Brothers, and they're like, you know, that old Simpsons episode when Ned Flanders is like, oh, Bart, have you got your mooching bag again? Yeah, no, but look, the subscribers are growing. Look, at some point, it's all going to be like nothing but profit for you. All right, here you go, you scamp. Go on, get out of here. Anyway, you got anything as good as Red versus Blue that you came with us 20 years ago? Oh, we're working on it right now. Don't worry, that's coming. So anyway, I don't mean to kick a rooster while it's down. I hope that the people who weren't involved in the sort of poor decisions that led to where they are, I hope they move on to stuff very quickly. Again, I think you're going to get a bunch of new companies popping up out of the ashes of this, and I wish them all the success in the world. Speaking of something which I didn't think I was going to wish the success of, when I heard Amazon spent a truck ton of money on acquiring the rights to making a Fallout TV show, I was like, oh, they're jumping on that bandwagon, ain't they? If they weren't already bloody broke from spending all that money on that Lord of the Rings show, they decided to take that sort of money and put that into Fallout, and we got that trailer. Hot god damn. I can see everyone nodding. Moles, what was your impression of the Fallout trailer that we got last week?
This is going to be a computer game franchise, hopefully done well the first time.
Yeah, absolutely.
It looks great. It looks fantastic, let's face it.
It looks like a George Miller movie. You know what I mean? Like the music just felt very like dystopian Mad Maxy, but it had that 50s swang to it. And when you had Walter Goggins... straight away, the first scene, him walking down with his hair slicked back, and he's just like talking in a 50s sort of style about the world of tomorrow, and it's like, oh man, you capture, you know, when you like, it's like porn, when you see it you know it and it's probably going to arouse you. That's what I felt when I saw that first scene. Lovely. Hemming, what was your thoughts?
Absolutely lovely. That's what we love to hear. It was the ink spots when it's, I don't want to set the world on fire.
Why do people make songs like that anymore?
Exactly. Why don't they?
All right, yeah, well, I want Cardi B to be like, do you want my wet ass pussy?
It's a dying art and we need to bring it back.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, as soon as that started, I was like, okay, I am all on board with this. Visually, it looks great. I'm interested to see whether they're going to bring in some of the characters. Character types. We didn't see a super mutant, so we didn't see a 7-foot-tall, giant, muscular Hulk-like character.
Yet.
I didn't see a Deathclaw.
That's like something for season two.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I think that it looks like really faithful, and I'm hopeful. I am optimistic.
Very much so. I will say one of the things that I really enjoyed about this was there seems to be a certain naivety perceived by anyone who's a bunker person. And seeing the protagonist, I don't know who she is, right, but just walking around and meeting people for the first time, and it's like, oh, you're one of those fucking morons, you know, sort of thing. And she's just
which
like...
Which is bang on.
Which is exactly bang on, right? And it's just... It's like so much effort has gone into the world, the immersion of this. And of course, it's written by Jonathan Nolan. If anyone has seen anything that Jonathan Nolan has wrote in Adaptation Land, he adapted Westworld. And season one of Westworld is chef's kiss brilliant. Like, seriously. It's a Nolan joint. So, sorry, my heating's just come on. So if you hear some random background noise, let me know. Producer Miles, I'll turn it off. But he's a timey-wimey guy. I think we're going to get some timey-wimeyness. He's a Nolan, so of course we're going to get some of that. Like I say, the budget looks absolutely incredible behind this. It's that Amazon money. Moles, have you got a prediction about where this ends?
No idea, mate. Hemming says, if they're faithful, because visually they are, they're nailing some of this stuff. If it's faithful, they may follow the suit of the storylines of the games. It may be something completely different. Obviously, the premise stays the same. But
yeah,
who knows?
I kind of want a special. Like, I want season one to be excellent, and I either want season two or like a Christmas special set in New Vegas. And it's just going around the New Vegas.
Yeah, I'd be down for that. I wanted to give another nod. Matt Berry as Mr. Handy, the robot, is going to be fucking hilarious. I can't wait to see what that gets up to, because I love that man.
We're entering like a golden age of like video. Like, it wasn't that long ago on this pod, we were like, saw Sonic, probably the best video game adaptation I've ever seen. As I actually, you're probably not wrong. Fast forward like 2.5-3 years, and it's like we've had Last of Us and other stuff as well. I can't think off the top
Mario
of my head.
Movie.
The Mario movie. Ooh. That's been.
I know. I apologize, but once we finished off with this Fallout chat, I've got a quick.
Is it related? Is it related to the it was a trailer a couple of weeks ago. I can't remember. Beloved franchise. Jack Black does the voice of the robot. Can't remember what it's called off the top of my head.
No, but that can be another one. Let's just do it. Borderlands trailer doesn't look great. I don't like it because all the characters are played by old actors.
That don't look like they don't look like their counterparts at all.
They're much older than their counterparts should be.
They look like old people cosplaying.
Yes,
as Borderlands
exactly
people.
Yeah, because the whole idea of the Borderlands universe is a lot of people don't actually live that long, so they shouldn't be that old. But I don't have much more to say about that. What I was going to say is, about a couple of hours ago, Nintendo put out an announcement to say that the Super Mario Bros. 2 film is going to be released in April 2026, and it is in production now.
Nice. How did they do it? Please tell me it was Jack Black singing a song.
No, it was literally just Miyamoto put a post out on the Nintendo Twitter account and just went, "Hi everybody, it's Miyamoto here. We're making a new Mario film because the last one did really well. See you in 2026.
Amazing. Jack Black has been prolific recently, in particular Tenacious D.
He's back, isn't he?
He's back.
He goes in cycles. Jack Black just, boom, here's loads of love films. He did it like 20 years ago. Boom, here's loads of films. Now we're just going to be quiet for a little bit.
He's back again.
And now he's back.
Tenacious D have done a cover of Hit Me Baby One More Time, which is actually the song to Kung Fu Panda 4. And it's just like, first of all, there's another Kung Fu Panda movie coming out very soon. So, good for the kids. And you know what? I've got nothing against them. I love them. And the soundtrack to that, like, is Tenacious D. Obviously, like, not talking. I bet it'll be innuendos to boot, but they're not going to be specifically talking about kielbasa sausage, your butt cheeks is warm, to the extent that we expect them to anyway. We talked about Warner Brothers briefly, so let's talk about them for a second. They were having their earnings call in preparation for the new upcoming financial year. And one of the things that they've declared was, first of all, that Suicide Squad Kills the Justice League underperformed. In other news, water wet. Second piece of news against that was their video game strategy is going to double down on games as a service and free-to-play mobile games. I know everyone keeps saying to me, like, you know, it's like Rooster Teeth with Warner Brothers with the money. One day we'll get good. Everyone keeps saying, well, someone's going to tap into the mobile market properly eventually because everyone's got a device, everyone's got a mobile device, everyone can tap into it. It's like the same people that have managed to convince Capcom to make a fucking like-for-like version of Resident Evil Village for iOS 15. Anyway, back to this point of, what are Warner Brothers doing?
Well, I don't know. Is there someone on the board that doesn't like Batman?
Yes, he's called James Gunn. No, I'm joking. There's something going on. Is there just like the world's biggest idiot at Warner Brothers where they're just like, yeah, go on then. Like, yeah, we'll just come. Yeah, we'll bring our mooching sack up to you. Like, who is asking? Where's Hemming? You know video games more than anyone, right? Tell me why ain't nothing but a party. Why the fuck would anyone put their hard-earned schmeckles in such a roulette wheel of games as a service being successful, because even the successful games as a service are not successful. So why? Mm. Why do this?
It's pie in the sky hoping that they don't have to ever make another game again. It's make one game and mooch off it forever because GTA did, is basically what people are hoping for, not realizing that GTA had a hell of a lot of work put into it and continues to have a hell of a lot of work put into it. But Warner Brothers don't want to do that. They'll just chuck out Suicide Squad and go, ta-da, what do you mean you don't like it? This decision baffles me for them to double down on the games as a service. They had the highest selling game of the year last year in Hogwarts Legacy. Single player game, no bullshit, just a very good single player game about an IP that people love. And it sold like gangbusters. And they're going, sod that, we don't want to do more like that. Let's do more like this shit game that's failed. I don't understand.
Do you think the public disclosure, which I don't know how loud it was, in the video game community it was very loud. I don't think the rest of the world give a shit as much as the video game community actually did about that game. Do you think that tarnished it a little bit? Because I can see, if they're going to double down on this gas
so
stuff,
much money.
Then why don't they just fucking do an online mode for Hogwarts Legacy and just go,
they probably are working on it now.
Well, that would make more sense than then just going, hey, we're going to try a lot of random games as a service and we're going to continue supporting Rocksteady with Suicide Squad Kills the Justice League for now. Like, I think they kind of have to say that because it's still, like, I think we're technically in what they would call the release cycle still for
that
game.
They're not going to kill it off within 2 months.
Yeah, that's the thing. They're still in the release cycle, so they can't come out and say actively, you know. I mean, they've already learned their lesson from James Gunn coming out before half of the fucking DC movies were being released and going, oh, yeah, I'm going to, like, reset the whole thing. Don't bother seeing any of these films because, you know what, I'm just going to restart the whole thing. So I suppose they kind of learned the lesson from that. But, yeah, it's just bonkers. Like, why? But I will say there is a little silver lining to this, which is a bit of it happens every couple of years. A game comes out that just captures the imagination. It becomes a bit of a darling of the game communities and everyone just loves it, right? Whether that's your Hades or whether that's your pressure washer simulator. Like, there's always going to be these sort of oddball games that come out where you go, you know what? This is pretty fucking dope. I don't think anyone had on their list that Helldivers 2 was going to be the kind of phenomena that it's becoming at the moment. Hemming, you've got this bit of a whirl. Talk to us about this. It's a game as a service, and it seems fun.
Yeah, so this was one game that I was excited about, but I didn't know that a lot of other people were as excited about it as I was, and to the level where word of mouth and just people talking about how fun it is and how affordable it is, because it came out at only £34.99, half price of your AAA title. And it's just sold like gangbusters, and it keeps going to the point where they were breaking the servers on like a daily basis and having to improve and improve and improve. It is a game as a service, but it does it properly, and it doesn't force monetization down your throat. And I think that's the key aspect of it. This game does not tell you, give us all your money now or else you're missing out on stuff. It just gets you invested in playing the game and doing stuff in a certain way. So recently, you could drop down on a planet. I suppose I should probably say what the game is first. It's a third-person shooter where you are a bunch of suicide space marines going out there to kill bugs and robots for democracy.
It's Starship Troopers, the game. I mean, yes, first of all, 100%. take my money. All you had to say, and I think this shows the potential of that fucking franchise, right? Stop sleeping on it, give us a fucking remake or a belated sequel, right? Like, if you just said to everyone, Starship Troopers Online, Moles, Starship Troopers Online?
Yes.
Exactly. Continue,
Hemming.
There
you go. So what they do as a game of services, the idea is you are defending the home planet of Super Earth from the robots and the bugs, and you go to a planet and you do a mission. And every time you or somebody else playing the game online completes a mission, the percentage of liberation for the planet goes up a tick. If you lose, it goes down a tick. And the idea is that you liberate the whole universe and have a big party and you win. And every now and then on their social media or in the game, it'll just say, this planet is now under attack and is a key target. You need to go liberate it. And it just asks you all to go there and give you a bit of a reward. So they hyped up that they were going to release mech suits for people to use in the game. Mm-hmm. And to do that, they were hyping it up for a couple of weeks and then went, oh no, the planet that's making the mech suits is under attack. Quick, save the planet so you can get a mech suit.
That's so cool.
So you jump onto the planet, save the planet, everybody gets a free mech suit. I thought that's a great idea. You aren't
what
forcing monetization.
What a way to encourage
exactly.
playing. Yes.
Yeah. Reward for playing the game as it's meant to be played. You unlock things naturally. They're doing it properly. And
is there, is there vehicles?
There's not. So apart from the mech suit, there's no other vehicles. Because the world's not massive. It's just a small like arena that you do some objectives on and then extract and get off the planet.
Someone, when I first... I started seeing social media is kind of like the place where you see this sort of stuff grow, right? And a lot of people were sharing, this is what's the feeling you used to get when you used to play the original Star Wars Battlefront games, of just, it's a bit chaotic, it's kind of everywhere, it looks like the Clone Wars is going bonkers. Yeah. And like, it's just like, you know, it just sounds like a bit of fun. And isn't that what video games should be? Yeah, I'm sold. I cannot wait to get into this. Is there any, like, am I right in thinking that they proper play off the parodiness of it's kind of Starship Troopers? Do you want to know more? Like, it's almost
mate,
like that.
Absolutely. The opening video of it is a clip of a man walking down the street and then his whole family gets murdered by a giant bug and cuts to a guy going, does that look familiar to you? Fight for your planet and democracy. Join the Helldivers. And yeah, it's just Starship Troopers.
Yes. The only good bug is a dead bug. That's
which is a line that one of the characters says in the game.
Ah, oh, amazing, amazing. It is sold. 35 speckles. God damn it, I'll give you a big sloppy kiss. You deserve it. So, also, since we last spoke, it's been a lot. I feel like it's an old Victorian letter, this pod. It's been 25 days since our last letter. But also, there was the DLC announcement for Elden Ring, and I've been getting back into Elden Ring. I didn't say at the start what I've been playing. I've been, my character, a.k.a. Bobby Boulders, is at level 230 now. 230.
What have you been doing?
I've been on New Game Plus and I've just been like taking out lots of what I really enjoy doing is in Elden Ring, and I'm sure you can do this in other Souls games eventually as well, is that everything, it's like Australia, everything is designed to kill you and wants to kill you and can kill you very easily, and your weak, meek, little, feeble body falls apart at every encounter with even the most smallest of things, right? So when you are level 230, although stuff can still kill you, you do can go dead, dead, dead. And I enjoy walking around places that used to take me hours to complete and just be like, meh, meh, nah. So that's to me, that should be a fucking subgenre on Reddit of just people uploading videos of, remember this boss? Yeah, two hits, mate. Remember that bad guy? Yeah, you know that guy in the big horse that used to be really annoying? That dragon? Yeah, fuck that dragon. That is what I'm enjoying. That actually is a form of therapy for me. It's been great fun. So they've announced this new DLC. It's called Shadow of the Erdtree. And one of the things which it looks like is that it's forming on Melana. Melana? The rock core. Scarlet Rock.
Melania.
That was it, yeah. I actually killed her for the first time the other day. And because
hey, congratulations.
You actually walked me through to the bit, first of all, to
Right? Over that bloody treetops and all those trumpet-playing mushrooms.
Those motherfucking trumpet-playing bastards. But I got there in my first playthrough of the main story, and I was like, nope, not happening. So I avoided it like the plague, and now I've been doing New Game Plus, and I'm basically at the point where I can go complete New Game Plus. And I was like, you know what? I'm about 80 levels higher than I was before. I've gone back to my bleed build because I've got to say I'm a bleed god. I can literally just, I have two Rivers of Blood katanas just slashing through. Now I get to the big old trident that can just like kill everything. It's good fun. It is good fun. That of a tears mimic, you're doubling up and you're having a great time. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to go back. And I was like, okay, I'm prepared for this. I watched loads of YouTube videos how to do this. I killed her in 30 seconds. I killed her before she even got to the second part because I was so overpowered by that point. But it's great. Anyway, point is that we're going back to Lands Between. The new area is apparently the size of Limgrave in terms of size of what you're going to be getting for that. It looks like you're looking at about 30 schmeckles to play for this DLC, and we're looking at around June. Hemming, will you be going back? And are you going to be going back to this new DLC?
Yes, absolutely. 100%. I cannot wait. I can't believe it's been 2 years since this came out, by the way. That's just flown by. like nobody's business. Yeah, it looks like it's going to be following Mikala, who is talked about quite a bit in the main game, and you see them kind of in an egg at one point.
Ah, yes, the hand.
Out more about them. The hand that's at the egg in the big blood temple where you probably spent a lot of time grinding. That's the place to grind.
Yes.
Killing those little dweebs in the blood temple.
Yes.
Yeah, it looks like, I think the trailer showed at least like 6 or 7 bosses, which for a From Software game is huge. Normally their DLC is 3-4 bosses at most.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to be huge. I cannot wait. I need to get back into it.
Yeah, I'm hyped for it now. I want it now. I'm in Elden Ring mode right now and loving every moment. You know what's going to happen? They're going to find some narrative way to set your rune count to 0 when you go to this new place, aren't they?
No, I hope not. Bloody hope not. They never done
bloody
that before,
hope not.
So I hope not this time.
I hope that I can still wander around in this new place and still be like, hi, new guy, boom. Hi, new boss, boom.
Oh, new DLC, new character.
Oh, mate, I would be very upset. I've got very attached to Bobby Boulders. Anyway, also we talked about since the last pod that we speculated on the Xbox podcast announcement. I don't want to spend too much time dwelling on it because A, it's kind of old news now, and B, I don't want to kick a dog while it's down, right? So we had the Xbox Showcase podcast. It felt very weird. It felt like an all hands where people were being laid off. You know, it had that vibe to it of just, we're going to take some games and we're going to take them from Game Pass and put them on other platforms. It's been heavily speculated about what they are. I think one of them's kind of confirmed to be Sea of Thieves now. I think even Sea of Thieves, like Rare, have come out and said they're getting ready for it. Yeah, exactly. So, like, I don't really know too much to talk about this other than, hey, we all said there's a big audience that aren't on Game Pass. There's more people not on Game Pass than are on Game Pass, so you probably should go get that money. So good luck to them, and let's see where it takes them.
Yeah, good for them. I've pre-ordered Hi-Fi Rush because I was interested in playing it, so there's a purchase already they've got from it.
Oh, there you go. Good old Phil. Phil's probably sitting there going, yes, I got one! He's like in Ghostbusters.
We got one!
Yeah. And then it just wakes up all the Xbox stuff and go down the pole. And okay, let's not spend too much time dwelling on that. One last thing I'd like to talk about, though, is during the last State of Play, we talked about Stellar Blade. And, you know, there's lots of curvous reasons as why we like that game, but actually, mainly because the gameplay, it's very much like fucking adrenaline, Devil May Cry-esque action in a world that misses games like Bayonetta. We get to have an exclusive on this. I think it's exclusive anyway. And the demo for Stellar Blade got released a little bit early by mistake and then removed. But that didn't stop the internet from getting hold of this and uploading 40-minute-long videos of people just caning through the gameplay. You had a chance to see any of this, Hemming? Is it make you more hyped for this game?
I haven't had a chance to actually look at much of the gameplay of this. I've been trying to avoid it because I know I'm going to get it. But what I've not been able to avoid is more arse.
There's a lot of
arse out there. Yeah. I just see a still shot of arse.
You know, it reminds me of, I always think someone needs to gift this and put it all over the internet. You know when the GTA 6 trailer came out and IGN, bless them, they tend to do this thing where they're trying to make lots of video content and they're running out of ideas. So what they do is they'll go find an expert in a field to talk about something stupid in a like video. So they'll get like a sword expert, like a legitimate blacksmith, to talk about Final Fantasy 16's like swords. And it's like, I'm not going to spend 20 minutes watching that, IGN. I mean, bravo for thinking about it, but no. And they decided to randomly track down the voice actor for Michael to talk about his opinion of GTA 6. And it's just, he kind of looks like Michael, so it's kind of charming hearing him talk. You see Michael, it's just like, it's a real life Michael. But he's just his face, so happy. He just goes, it's just loads of asses. I just want to see clips of him just going, asses, because that's basically what this game is, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on where your flavour lies off that. But like, yeah, the internet went absolutely bonkers over just lots of like angles of butts.
And the different costumes that she's going to be wearing.
Yeah.
I mean, the game looks fun from the gameplay I saw previously. I do want to pick it up because it's very, very Nier Automata flavoured, which is right up my alley. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm for hyped them. For this game. Good for them. Who makes it? Who's the studio?
I
just assumed you knew every video game and every studio and every director involved. It feels very Capcom-y. And speaking of Capcom, they keep doing these showcases just to show off Dragon Dogma 2. And good for them. Lucky for them. And apparently their character creator is like second to none. Like people are already like making like Scooby-Doo and stuff like that in it. Give us some Resident Evil news. I'm dying here, people. Like, you know what? It's been like a year since we've had any decent news. So give me that. But anyway,
you just want 5 remake. It's gonna happen. You know it is.
I want Code Veronica. So, like, they've teased it in.
Yeah, I know what you want. I want. But that's Code not what you're gonna get.
I'm gonna lap it down, mate. To be honest, whatever they bring, you know that meme that Elon Musk keeps tweeting of like a woman feeding a goat, right? That goat, I'm the goat, and it's Capcom with a bottle, and the bottle just says Resident Evil, because that's just me. I'm just going to guzzle it down. I'm going to love it, and I'm going to platinum it. But anyway, I think that is all the news that's fit the print. Hemming, Moles, have we got anything else?
All good.
I just wanted to, not really news, but I wanted to say at the start, but I forgot to. I took in a bit of culture in the past few weeks while we were not on the pod. I went to go see some orchestral music being played, some video game music played live
this,
at the theatre. Yeah, so I went out and saw, speaking of Nier Automata, I saw Nier Automata live, and that was incredible. It's like a 100-piece orchestra in the South Bank Centre, which I'd not been to before, but it's a massive hall. The acoustics in there were incredible, and it just had brilliant clips of the game playing in the background while this choir and orchestra playing the soundtrack, which was incredible. Yoko Taro, the director of the game, came out at the end and said the president of Square Enix was in the building, and if we scream loud enough, they'll make us a sequel. And then some news did come out that said perhaps a sequel is now in the works. So I was a very happy chappy about that one.
You contributed towards that. That's exactly what happened.
I am claiming it. Absolutely. They heard me. The other one I went to was a bit different. This was called Final Fantasy and Intimate Concert. So it was only 11-piece orchestra, and they played a bit of an interesting mix of Final Fantasy music. Some of the stuff that you wouldn't necessarily pick up on in the first half, but then the second half they just came out with all the classics,
the
Tizanakand, Blue Fields from Final Fantasy VIII, the Overworld theme, the Final Fantasy VII battle theme, which was just a solo jazz piano version, which was insane. This guy was going absolutely ham on the piano. The main theme, which was just an acoustic guitar solo. And then at the very end, a full-on jazz mad remix of the Chocobo theme, while the conductor joined along going mental on a slide whistle. Amazing time. Masashi Hamauzu was there, who is sort of the second half of the series Nobuo Uematsu. So Uematsu was the composer for the first 10 Final Fantasies, and then Hamauzu took over from 10 onwards. So he's done quite a few of them since, and he was there in person,
wow,
which was nice to see him. And yeah, just had a lovely time listening to some very lovely music.
How'd you find out about this stuff?
The Final Fantasy one I've had sort of on a mailing list for years, because I went to go see them 11 or 12 years ago, where I got to actually meet Nobuo Uematsu, got him to sign my copy of Final Fantasy IX, and I met Hamauzu there as well to sign a copy of Final Fantasy XIII 2. Underrated, that one.
Wow.
So I've been on a mailing list, and whenever they come out in London, I check it out. And then I think just because of that, like a recommended thing, the Nier Automata one popped up, and yeah, snagged a ticket as soon as I could. It's well worth it. I love it. Just hearing it in person with a full massive orchestra like that is a sight to behold and to hear. So if you ever get the chance, if there's a game that you love, give it a go.
Yeah, absolutely. And from the pictures you tweeted and what you were sending when you were there, like, just sounds incredible, and it just makes you want to go pick up a controller, which isn't the point of all of this kind of stuff to begin with.
It is indeed.
So on that note, I'd like to say thank you to our lovely listener. And if you've enjoyed what you listen to, if you like the cut of our jib, if you like the merchandise, click on that subscribe button. I'm going to thank our producer, Jonathan Mills.
Thank you very much.
And thank you to Mr. Hemming. Always a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
And Michael, unfortunately, couldn't join us on this occasion, but he'll be back next pod. Bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and probably got a Souls game or two to tell us about as well. So until that auspicious occasion, it's a pleasure to serve you.